Coming at you this time on a Friday, this is the Sunday Morning Grind Podcast, episode number 53. Josh Taylor, Greg Finley. Greg, we talked about episode number 51 a while back. We did that episode a couple weeks back. The easy answer to episode 51 was James Ferrier.
Correct.
It was just easy.
Correct. And that was right after we did Larry Foote.
It was right after we did Larry Foote. So, like, you name one, you might as well name the other one. Well, in the true spirit of that group of linebackers, now we're not talking about the Super Bowl 43 linebacking core that would involve Lamar Woodley, who was number 56. However, number 56 will probably be Lamar Woodley episode.
After Joey Porter at 55.
After Joey Porter at 55. But we figured it only made sense to honor one of those linebackers from the Super Bowl 40 team, who was number 53, and his name was Clark Hagans.
It was pretty easy for us.
Very easy.
After 50 and 51 to go with Clark Hagans at 53.
It was pretty simple. And this is considering the fact that you came up with a really good one with Joel Hanrahan for 52. I thought that was good.
It was because of the bobblehead collection. I was putting I was adding Dre Beck to my bobblehead collection, and I saw my Hanrahan. And when you said 52, I was like, dude, hammer time. It's Hanrahan. So.
Yeah, your bobblehead collection gets a shout out because it inspired us to name an episode. But we got a lot going on in this episode. We got some cool stuff happening. We have the hot sheet picks to talk about. We have an old story to tell of a person that you and I have very, very distinct history with that had an honor bestowed upon him for Major League Baseball. We'll discuss that. Plus, pretty big announcement, Craig. We have a new sponsor. This is huge.
Yes, it is. And it's all thanks to you, my friend. You locked this down, and Ethos is our sponsor now of the Sunday Morning Grind Podcast.
Sunday Morning Grind Podcast, now presented to you by Ethos Life. So really excited about that. It's been an awesome week to get everything on the table here. But you had something fun for us to start. We wanted to keep this a little bit lighter, at least to start out with. So what you got for me?
So, got to give a shout out to my friend Tim DiPietro at the Teeps on Twitter for sending me this. And my high school friend sends me a tweet that says, exclusive, Qatar bribed 8 Ecuadorian players $7.4 million to lose the opener 1-0 in the second half. 5 Qatari and Ecuador insiders confirmed this. We hope it's false. We hope sharing this will affect the outcome. The world should oppose FIFA corruption. Now, people on Barstool, coming up on Barstool, Qatar bribe boost. Get Qatar to be tied 0-0 at half and win 1-0 in full time, boosted to 1,500. Like, all the sports books are jumping all over this. FanDuel has a 1-0 outcome at plus 600. Like, is this a thing? Did they just fix a soccer game that's being played on Sunday between Qatar and Ecuador?
Oh, my God. What?
Yes. $7.4 million being bribed to the Ecuadorian, 8 Ecuadorian players.
I'd be lying if I said the FIFA corruption thing was a surprise, because
yes,
it's not.
It's been
a topic of conversation for months, if not years now, in that circle. So that's not surprising. But the thought of the host government paying a visiting team to throw a game against the home country's team.
And this is the World Cup, is it not?
It is the World Cup. That is absolutely bonkers. Like, that's not even a plot you could put in a movie that people would want to watch. That's absolutely insane. Truth is stranger than fiction. Part of me hopes this is a thing.
I actually think that it is not a thing. I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to bet it and they're going to lose. That's what I'm worried about. Like, people are going to jump all over. They're like, oh, inside information came out on Twitter that this is going on. It doesn't mean it's actually going to happen, though.
See, I thought you were going to ask me if the people that were setting the odds doing this as a stunt,
yes,
was the thing. Not the actual allegations of corruption being a thing, because I would be more likely to say the former is a thing as far as the odds makers kind of setting this thing up as a big ploy. I would see that more likely as a thing than the actual thing happening, because that, wow.
Somebody tweeted and said, have they agreed, asking for a friend, as he already had a bet in that the game ends 1-0 Qatar?
How much money would change hands if that actually went down?
So much. Like, how much money would people, like, how much trouble would the other team get in for this? They're bribing them $7.4 million. Is that not a penalty in this league?
You're talking about lifetime bans, probably.
Right?
Yeah. You're talking about lifetime bans from international play, probably lifetime bans from, you know, what is it? FA Cup and, I mean, anything you could think of.
That's why I'm worried that it's not going to be a thing.
Because Premier
now
League.
That, now that it's out, they're not going to be able to actually do it.
You'd like to hope so. I hope they're not going to be able to do it.
But now everyone's going to lose their money.
That's my thing is, if something like that leaks out, why would you attach that kind of odds to it?
Yes, exactly.
And risk yourself losing money unless they're pretty much daring for it to happen.
Another person put a same game parlay together. Qatar to win to nil. Match result will be Qatar early full-time result in a draw after halftime. Full-time score will be Qatar 1-0. Most goals to be scored in second half. Half with most goals.
What?
Like, from that tweet, everybody's just betting based off of what they just saw from that tweet.
Oof.
Could you imagine, though, if this was like a troll job? Like, you know how people are getting verified, but they're not actually verified people? What if this is a troll job?
It feels like that to me, because if you're putting money on this and you lose, there are going to be a lot of angry people. There's someone that's crazy enough to bet like their freaking mortgage
to bet the house on this.
They'll literally bet the house on this, or they'll put like 10 grand or some crazy rich dude with money to burn for no damn reason or drop like 2 million on it.
Yes.
That's what scares me. And the fact that so many people are putting money on it gives me reason and incentive not to do it.
Final thing on this, what gets more viewership, NFL Red Zone or this soccer game at 11 o'clock?
It might be that soccer game, man, because if this even has an inkling of truth, all eyes are going to be on that game. It will be the biggest story in all of sports if this is even remotely true, and God forbid it actually happens. Oh, my God, you will have conspiracy theories flying left and right. There will probably be a 30 for 30 by like Friday morning next week. It'll be insane. It'll be absolutely insane.
We need to talk about this next week
whenever we
see what happens.
We got to see what the outcome of the game was.
That was just, I couldn't not do an Is This a Thing bonus edition when I saw that.
That is absolutely, that's just, that's like bonkers.
That's like Black Sox scandal bad.
Yes. That's bigger than Black Sox scandal bad. That is insane.
$7.4 million.
Oof. Wow.
Why wouldn't you throw the game for that kind of money, you know?
So seven guys, $1.4 million. That's $200K apiece.
Yeah.
Yikes. Would you possibly get banned from a league
for $200K? How much do you think they make to play soccer in Qatar?
I mean, it depends on if they're playing are you playing in the Premier League? Are you playing?
Right.
For
if you're playing
a major,
in other leagues.
A major program, a major side, that's...
If you're not, probably.
Yeah. That's insane, man. That's absolutely nuts. I have no words. Wow.
Did I stun you with that one?
You floored me with that one. That was good.
That is a good one.
That's a good find.
I'm looking forward to following up on that next week.
Yeah, shout out to Tim for unearthing that one. That was good.
My man, Tim DiPietro.
Wow.
Okay. Now, we also got to talk about Our guy. Brock Lesnar. 2.0.
He might as well be Brock Lesnar. Paul freaking Goldschmidt. Name the National League MVP. Are we surprised?
No, we're not surprised.
No, we're not surprised. Given our history with Paul Goldschmidt, this is not surprising.
But especially this year, we kept tweeting each other and texting each other every time he did something because he was on a new level this year.
Yeah.
Like, he's always been good, but this year it seemed like Goldie took it to a new level of good.
And think about how good Arizona Paul Goldschmidt was.
Right. Until he got hit in the hand.
Until he got hit in the hand.
Yeah.
But this season, like 2022 Paul Goldschmidt makes Arizona Paul Goldschmidt look like freaking David Eckstein. Like, this is crazy. What he did this season was even bigger than anything I think you and I would have anticipated.
Correct.
Now, as we talk about previous history, this is a story we need to tell. What year was this? Was this 2019?
Yeah, it would have been 2019.
Yeah, it'd be 2019. Because we were still doing the Sunday Morning Grind as a show back then, as a radio show.
Right.
On 93.7 The Fan here in Pittsburgh. We were talking about the upcoming series, or at least one of the upcoming series with the Pirates and the was he still a Diamondback then?
No, he was the Cardinals.
He was the Cardinal then?
Yeah.
So we were talking about an upcoming series.
We were playing our favorite baseball game, the World's Worst Baseball, World's Worst Pirates preview.
Yeah.
And we were picking the week after. We were getting set up for the series ahead. It was the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series.
Yeah, so it's
because
happening
we were
the very
doing
next day.
It on Wednesday because we were doing it on Sunday.
Yeah,
and the Cardinals were coming to town, and I'm looking at my sheet in front of me, and I go, "Man, Paul Goldschmidt has been terrible this year." And after that,
we just buried him.
Yeah, and he just took off.
Like it got to the point where we were looking at other first basemen in the division, and I had the nerve. I had the audacity and the unmitigated gall.
This was bad.
To ask the question, is Paul Goldschmidt the worst first baseman in the division this year? Like, we just kept finding new ways to bury, of all people, Paul freaking Goldschmidt. We were acting like that man was dead and in the ground.
Correct.
And in that series against the Pirates, rumors of Paul Goldschmidt's demise were incredibly exaggerated.
He legitimately became a new man.
Oh, man.
And we apologized on air the week after.
we had to issue a formal apology the week after.
So I just looked up Pirates Cardinals 2019 to make sure that was the right year. First clip that comes up, Goldschmidt's go-ahead grand slam versus Pirates lifts Cardinals.
There it is. That's the one.
We're probably sitting there going, "Oh, Goldie, he ain't gonna do anything," and then he hits the grand slam.
I think it was like by the end of that third game, you're just like, "I think we messed up."
We're like, "What did we do?"
I'm like, "Yeah, we totally messed up." And it was,
I'm looking at all these box scores, and he's just in all of them with a home run.
Yeah, it just got worse as the series went along. He just kept hitting, like he just never stopped.
I honestly and truly believe he was in an Uber coming to PNC Park from his hotel, and he's, "Man, who are these two guys telling people that I'm the worst first baseman in the National League Central, and I'm having a down year? All right, game on," and he just took it to a new level.
I am convinced that we are going to find out one day that he's going to tell this story on like a random radio show or TV show or podcast. And it'll be like, what's one of the weirdest things that ever happened? Like, when you were on the road, be like, "Oh, I was in Pittsburgh this one time, and these two dudes were just burying me. And we were getting ready to play the Pirates of all teams. We're playing the freaking Pirates. Like, they didn't think I'd hit well against the Pirates. So I just went off and like hit like six home runs in four games or whatever." That story's gonna happen. And when I hear it, I'm gonna text you and be like, "You know, he's talking about us, right? He's talking about us."
If you are in the clubhouse and you get to interview him, just be like, "Have you ever heard of the show, The Sunday Morning Grind?"
We'll know if his face turns red, like really like Brock Lesnar.
He'll be like, "You're the guy, aren't you?"
He'll be like, "I remember you." And then he'll just F5 me in the middle of the clubhouse. And Heyman will come out.
He'll just pull out his phone and go, "Can you just read those stats off for me in the series in 2019 against the Pirates?"
Oh, yeah, because he probably has them saved in his notes section. Definitely.
It's like whenever Reggie Miller was trash talking Michael Jordan in a preseason game, Reggie's teammates go, "Man, who does this guy think he is, Reggie? You're outscoring Michael Jordan." He goes, "Yeah, Michael, who do you think you are?" Halftime comes, Michael outscores him by 30. He goes, "Don't you ever disrespect Black Jesus like that again."
Sure did. That was one of the best Jordan stories I've ever heard. That's incredible.
Reggie Miller, of all people, like, outscoring him in the first half. Michael's like, "All right, this guy wants the smoke in a preseason game. Yeah. Get me the ball."
We didn't tug on Superman's cape. We yanked at Brock Lesnar's fighting gloves, yeah, so to speak.
And he dropped his elbow on our faces and made us bleed.
Unbelievably. Like, just Paul Goldschmidt, I will reiterate this one more time. Paul Goldschmidt, we are sorry.
We acknowledge you.
We acknowledge you. We congratulate you, by the way,
yeah,
on winning the most valuable player of the National League. We knew you had it in you.
We know that you listen to this podcast, so we just wanted to say you're our favorite first baseman in the National League Central, and we respect you, and we are sorry.
You can stop standing in our yards now at night. We are no longer a threat to you. We promise.
All right.
Yep.
That gives us now 15 minutes to talk about Steelers.
15 minutes to talk about Steelers. I only need like five, honestly, because
before you empty the clip.
Because I do need to.
Let's first talk about the Saints game real quick.
Yes, let's do.
What a great performance by Kenny Pickett in the second half. The defense looked fantastic. No Minkah Fitzpatrick. And, you know, we get KZ back, who's your guy.
Devontae KZ.
KZ gets an interception, a really nice one. The Steelers get two turnovers. They got to Andy Dalton. TJ Watt came back like he never left. He looked great.
He looked fantastic.
The run game was successful, and you've been preaching that all season long. When the run game works, the passing works. Both things complemented one another. You couldn't ask for a better team to play against in a bye week than facing Andy Dalton and the New Orleans Saints.
And another thing that I tweeted this out. I said, this defense kept Alvin Kamara quiet.
They did.
Like, you can't overstate that. I originally tweeted understated. Then I said, I meant to say overstate, but you get my point.
He had five touchdowns the week before.
You can't overstate how this team shut down Alvin Kamara to the point where, after the game, they asked Mike Tomlin, you know, just about, like, the offensive approach and, like, oh, you know, you guys limited him on offense and you held him to 10 points. And Mike Tomlin said, he goes, we were pretty much concerned with just limiting Kamara and Taysom Hill in the Wildcat. He goes, that was our primary concern.
And they did just that.
And they did exactly that.
They went with the game plan of make Andy Dalton make plays. Don't let Kamara and Taysom Hill beat you on the run game. Make Andy Dalton make a throw. Now, granted, he made a throw. He made one to Johnson when he was standing wide open. Spillane didn't pick him up for the touchdown.
And that was in the two-minute drill.
Olave made a couple of plays. Fine.
Chris Olave was Chris Olave.
Yeah.
He's I mean, for what he's doing in his rookie season at New Orleans.
With Andy Dalton as his quarterback.
Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston, sometimes Taysom Hill in the Wildcat, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Ian Book.
Ian Book. Oh, my God. I forgot about Ian Book. Like, that's the carousel of quarterbacks he's had. Remember when some folks in Pittsburgh wanted Jameis Winston?
I do.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, I do remember that.
But, like, with that carousel of quarterbacks, he's still having the season that he had. But then I remind people, did you watch him play at Ohio State? Did you watch the receivers at Ohio State last season? They got some machines this year. Like, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a freaking cyborg by the time he gets to the NFL.
Kind of helps when your dad is who his dad is.
This is also true. But you think back to last season, you had Chris Olave, you had Garrett Wilson. Ohio State had talented
Smith
receivers.
And Jigba.
And you had Smith and Jigba. Jackson Smith and Jigba. You had all this talent last season, and that's not counting the guys who have been playing now. So this is just that testament to the kind of wide receiver talent that Ohio State has been mining, because I don't know if you just find kids like this anywhere. You got to be out mining and, like, finding gold, because that's the equivalent of what Ohio State did as far as receivers and Chris Olave.
And Olave would have had a couple more catches and possibly a touchdown if Dalton doesn't overthrow him or underthrow him on that one ball that ended up getting incomplete. KZ made a good play, but the ball was so underthrown.
I agree.
If Dalton makes the throw, he hits him in stride and it's a touchdown. So that
totally
was big.
Agreed.
That was big that they were facing Andy Dalton.
Andy Dalton 5 years ago probably makes that throw.
But this is the ghost of Andy Dalton.
Yeah, this is the ghost of Andy Dalton. Red Rocket Andy Dalton probably makes that throw.
Also, and I get it, they were playing the Raiders. The Raiders aren't a very good team on the East Coast on the road, but they held them scoreless. The Steelers scored points against this Saints defense. Cameron Jordan wasn't a big deal. The secondary wasn't too big of a deal. I mean, the Steelers were able to pretty much do what they wanted. Kenny Pickett threw the ball away whenever he didn't have anything instead of forcing bad throws. He's growing. Especially in that second half?
He ate a sack, too.
Yes.
When they were in scoring position, he ate a sack. I want to say it was on a second down. They were on maybe the 30-yard line of New Orleans. He was back to throw. The pocket was collapsing. He didn't have a play. He knew he was going to get hit, so all he did was just drop down to the ground
right, and
eat that sack because it kept him in field goal range. Why is that important? Because it's the thing he did not do against the Jets around the same area of the field in the fourth quarter with another opportunity to score and possibly extend a three-point lead that they eventually blew. So he didn't throw a pick there. He didn't force a ball. He said, you know what? I'll live to fight another day. He takes a sack. They get the field goal attempt. I want to say Matthew Wright missed it.
Yes.
But still, it stands to reason. And I tweeted about this. I said, Kenny Pickett has done a lot of things today that aren't going to show up on the stat sheet, but they are markers to how mature he's becoming. And one of those plays was that sack that he took in field goal range. That is a smart quarterback. That is an emotionally mature move by a quarterback in his rookie season. Rookie quarterbacks don't normally do that.
Right.
I'm not one of these people to heap unnecessary praise on Kenny Pickett, but when he does something good, I'm going to tell you he did something good. He did a lot of good things that won't show up on the stat sheet. He only completed 18 of 30 passes, but he threw a handful of them away. So I'm going to let him slide on that. But 60% completion percentage, it's probably a little bit below standard. 65 is probably what you expect now out of a quarterback in this day and age, which is not unreasonable. But still, 16 of 30, he didn't have any interceptions. He didn't throw for any touchdowns, but he didn't turn the ball over. And also, he had his best quarterback rating of any game where he's played four quarters this season. All that stuff stacks up. That is all growth. That is all improvement. Is it Hall of Fame worthy? No. Will it win you a lot of games if your defense gives up more than 10 points, like the Steelers gave up 10? Probably not. But it was enough to help his team win. And I had to explain this to somebody today on Twitter. Learning how to win and playing to win is part of the development process as a quarterback. You don't just become a good quarterback to just do a whole bunch of stuff willy-nilly and it not mean anything. A quarterback has to make plays that can still help his team win games. Would you like to see him fill up a stat sheet? Absolutely. That would be the ideal. But his job at the end of the day is to get that offense down the field and put them in position to win games. Kenny Pickett did that.
He did. And he also scored a touchdown. Quarterback sneak from the 1 yard line. It's nice to have a quarterback that can do a quarterback sneak from the 1 yard line.
It's a very, very welcome change, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And I was happy to see more targets in the way of Freiermuth and in way of Pickens. And Pickens got a touchdown on that reverse play. I thought that was a great play call.
It was a very smart execution by him too. He didn't wait to get around to the outside. He came across in jet motion, took the handoff. He found a crease right near the tackle box and just jumped right in.
Yeah.
Very smart move.
I'm going to let you have your 5 minutes, but real quick. And I wanted you to take a deep breath. I'm going to give you your 5 minutes.
I want to keep this as civil as possible because usually when I show emotion and I got to get animated about it, people get upset and then they run and tell their bosses. So we're not going to do that today because God forbid someone gets mad that I said something bad about them. But anyway, besides all that, let me start by asking a series of questions. Greg, how many weeks now have I been talking about this team's best chances of winning being based upon running the football, playing defense, and winning the turnover margin?
Every episode that we've done.
Every episode. Did I not write a column 3 weeks ago in CBS Pittsburgh saying the best way to help Kenny Pickett's development and win games for this team was to run the football efficiently, play good defense, and win the turnover margin?
Yes, you did.
Can it be said that in, I don't know, 25 of the 32 games this team has won in the last three seasons that they've done, for the most part, that by holding the other team to 20 points or less and having an even or positive turnover margin?
Yes, it can.
Haven't I been saying that for about a year now?
Yes, you have.
So, my next question is, why? Why are there some people, both inside our colleagues in the local media market and people surrounding them, why are they on now? Just now. Now that this game has come and gone, or in some cases, the days leading up to this game. Now that this past week has come and gone, why are all of these people suddenly talking about this as if it is some new freaking discovery that they never thought of before?
It doesn't fit their narrative of bashing the offensive coordinator and the quarterback and the coach.
Greg.
Now that they're winning, now it fits their narrative.
Not only have I been saying this on every episode we've done on this show, not only have I said this on my own radio show, not only have I said this on the Ireland Contracting Nightly Sports Call, if you're in Pittsburgh every night, 10:35, Pittsburgh CW, not only have I been saying this on Chris Carter's podcast, on the Locked On Steelers podcast, shout out to Carter. Not only did I say this back in March when we were speculating on who the incoming quarterback could be for the Steelers in free agency, when I was asked to pick between Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, and Mitchell Trubisky. And my answer was Mitchell Trubisky. Why? Because it fits the Steelers' profile of trying to win football games by running the football, playing defense, and winning the turnover battle. I said that back in March. I don't know how many times I need to say things to you folks out there, and you look at me like I'm speaking Greek and me still be right about it. I have been telling you all along how this is going to work. Greg, 2 years ago, did I not drop it on this show 2 years ago about the changes that coordinator would be?
Yes, you did.
That they would be Terrell Austin on defense and Matt Canada on offense?
Yes,
you did. Did I not predict that 2 years ago, almost to the freaking day?
You did.
I've been telling y'all things for almost 2 years now. There's a reason why I added "He Who Remains" in my freaking Twitter bio, because I have literally paved the road and y'all have just walked down it ever since. I have been giving you step by step, line by line, hand feeding you what is going to happen with this franchise and why. And y'all look at me like I've lost my mind. And all that's been happening is me being proven right over and over and over and over again. And once again, I'm going to drop this on you. You're going to be like, oh, he's making a bunch of noise because he got one thing right. No, cheesy rat. I've been getting this right for 2 years. I've been breaking this down to you line by line for 2 years. And now, out of the freaking blue, people want to start spouting the same stuff I've been spouting for weeks, months, and Sundays. Get in line. I want a quarter every time you drop the same stuff I've been saying. There's only two people exempt from the rounds I'm spitting off right now. One of them is Chris Carter and one of them is Alan Saunders, because they're the only two people that I've heard besides me saying this repeatedly as being the important thing this team needed to do if they were going to work this transition from a quarterback they had for 18 seasons into the next generation of this offense. I've been saying this for a while. If this rebuild for this organization, which we need to just accept it for what it is, this is a rebuild, Greg.
Yes, it is.
If this rebuild is going to have any success, this has to be a part of it. Why? Look around the league. The teams leading divisions, the teams that have mostly winning records, the teams that are probably in playoff positions, the vast majority, Greg, are all doing the same thing. They are running the ball. They are playing defense, and they are winning the turnover margin. I'm not making this up. You know it's bad when I walk into the barbershop and one of the barbers goes, man, that thing you were talking about last week, they just talked about it on ESPN. I'm like, go figure. He's like, you were talking about how the league is trending towards running the football now and everybody needs to, you know, start using the run game. I was like, Chance, I need to start charging people. I need to start taxing y'all for the stuff I keep dropping on you and people keep borrowing it. And you better believe if this keeps up, I'm coming to collect. Because it just happened this past week. It finally came to fruition. Greg, I tweeted before the Cleveland game. I said three words, run the ball. This has been a problem with this offense for 5 years, dating back to the 2018 season. Le'Veon Bell left, Todd Haley left, and the run game left with them. This is not a secret. It's not some weird discovery. It's on record. If you don't believe me, look it up. I love the stat line that this was the first time the Steelers had run for 200 yards in a game since 2016. You know who the last running back who did it was?
Le'Veon
Bell in Buffalo against the Bills. You know what else happened later on in 2016? The Steelers won two playoff games. Those were the last two playoff games they've won, actually. You know what they did in each of those playoff games? They ran for at least 170 yards in each of those last two playoff games. And what have they not done in any playoff game since then, Greg?
Run the football. Because I get so far behind.
Send me my check. I'm done.
We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to break down last week's college football and NFL hot sheet. And we will preview this week's slates with this week's edition of Hot Sheet. This is episode 53 of the Sunday Morning Grind podcast, presented by Ethos Life. The Sunday Morning Grind podcast is presented by Ethos Life. Get up to $2 million in life insurance the easy way with Ethos. Skip the medical exam and weeks of waiting. With just a few health and lifestyle questions, Ethos approves up to 95% of applicants in about 10 minutes with coverage from trusted carriers. Tailor your policy to fit your budget and get help from licensed agents whenever you need it. Ethos provides instant coverage for more families than any other provider and a top-rated experience customers love. In the time it takes to drink your morning coffee, you can get peace of mind for your family today with Ethos.
music makes my soul happy. Second half, episode number 53 of the Sunday Morning Grind podcast, presented by Ethos Life, the Clark Hagans episode. Greg, it's time for our favorite part of the second half. Time for the hot sheet. Then we'll do the NCAA first, because of course, it's the NCAA on CBS music playing.
It's not so hot, though. We are both 9 games under 500.
We are far below room temperature.
Once again.
We are tepid right now.
Once again.
We are flaccid right now.
A really bad week for us.
Jeez.
We are flaccid.
We are flaccid.
Well, Pitt, Virginia looked good from the get-go.
Yes.
2 pick sixes in 16 seconds.
I felt pretty good about that one early.
So did I. Pitt covered with ease. We won that one. LSU and Arkansas, the spread was 3. We're counting pushes as wins. LSU won by 3.
Although still, we'll pick. Love my Hogs, but I picked LSU.
Alabama, Ole Miss.
By the way, LSU SEC West champions.
Yeah.
What's Brian up? Kelly won the SEC West in his first season.
Loses to Florida State, and everybody thought that he was cooked after that, and then he turned it around.
We thought he was the biggest joker walking. However, when he took that job, I told people, I said, he now has the opportunity to do the thing he was never going to do at Notre Dame, which is beat Nick Saban. And he did it in his first season in overtime in Death Valley and locked up the SEC
West.
By
going for 2, which is a pretty ballsy move.
It was. If you're going to slay the dragon, you got to do it boldly. Good for him.
Alabama, Ole Miss. You took Ole Miss. You got it. Alabama did not cover the 12. I got it wrong.
They ain't kiffing in the Grove, baby. Alabama on the road. Can't trust them.
Well,
cannot trust him.
I don't want to talk about it. Louisville at Clemson. We both went Louisville, and Clemson cleaned up house.
Of course they did. You picked against them.
Yep. Yep. Anytime you doubt them, that's when they show up. Whenever you go, oh, it's Clemson, they'll win. They'll lose to Notre Dame.
You know what Clemson has done to me now?
What's that?
In terms of my frustration. You know what the result of my frustration with Clemson is?
What is it?
I want North Carolina to beat them now in the ACC championship game. For 2 reasons. One, because they keep frustrating me with how they play when I pick or pick against them. 2, Mac Brown winning the ACC just makes me laugh. I want to be able to cackle like a witch on Halloween if Notre Dame did beat Clemson. But if North Carolina beats Clemson in the ACC championship game, I will cackle like the Wicked Witch of the West.
I'm just telling you, I'm telling you right now, if it happens, I'm starting a group message with you, me, and Jack, and we are just sending Mac Brown gifts, and he'll be like, who is this?
He'll know it's me, because Jack has my number. Shout out to Jack Sorensic. I guess we should tell that backstory someday about how Jack hates Mac Brown.
Jack just randomly texted me on a Saturday and was like, I can't stand Mac Brown. It's like, why?
Yeah, we talked about him on the show is what it was. We talked about him, but Jack doesn't like Mac Brown.
And anytime North Carolina lost that season, he'd just text me like, typical Mac Brown.
Oh, man.
Like, Jack, of all people to hate, Mac Brown's a weird one.
And Jack is such a lovely, friendly human being. But he hates Mac Brown.
If he doesn't like you, you're probably not a good person.
You probably did something to draw that ire. I would agree. Now that we've gone off track.
Washington at Oregon. Washington wins the game outright because Oregon went for it on 4th and 1 on their own 35-yard line and didn't get it because the running back fell. Actually, no, Bo Nix fell. It was a quarterback keeper and he fell. So Oregon lost.
Do you still have faith in Bo Nix now?
I don't want to talk about it.
I keep telling you Bo Nix isn't a thing. Bo Nix is like fetch. Stop trying
but
to make
fetch.
But
then he throws for 5 touchdowns against UCLA.
I know. We keep trying to make fetch a thing, and we keep trying to make Bo Nix a thing. We keep trying.
Fetch.
Shout out to Mean Girls.
TCU did what they were supposed to do. They locked it up and beat Texas.
Yeah. Told you, man. TCU.
Why were they 7.5 point dogs?
I don't know.
That one.
Because it was Texas at home, and Gary Patterson's coaching Texas defense, or he's on the staff. I told you, that's what
it
was.
Texas. We don't trust Texas on this show.
The Arkansas fan in me will not allow me to trust Texas
right.
on this show.
Corso said he wasn't even at game day, but he told Herb Street from afar, somebody knows something because Texas should not be a 7.5 point favorite, so I'm taking Texas.
Ooh, Corso.
And they were losers.
I think it was a lack of faith in TCU.
I think so, too. And that game was 0-0 after the first quarter. I'm like, This is the kind of game Texas wants. They want TCU to not score points, and they don't want to get into a shootout. Well, as soon as TCU started scoring points, Texas wasn't able to come back from that.
Max Duggan is legit. That wide receiver is legit. The running back, I think, is he may not be, you know, top tier, but he's good enough. They got what they need in order to score points, and their defense speaks for itself.
I agree.
I have them in the playoff. I've had them in the playoff for like a month now.
And they're in the playoff
now. And they're in the playoff ranking. They just found their way into it. Like, I'm not backing off of this. TCU, I've been telling people, TCU, the Big 12 is theirs to lose, and if they hold on and win it, there's a playoff spot waiting for them. I'm not backing off of it.
How big of an underdog would they be against Georgia? Like 25 points?
We're talking 18, 19?
Yeah.
On a neutral site?
A three-score game.
On a neutral site, probably a three-score game. If they're playing in Athens, probably 24-25.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because Georgia, once again, is the Roman Reigns of college football.
And we acknowledge you.
And we acknowledge you. Tribal chief.
All right. Week 12.
Let's go.
Duke at Pitt. Pitt -7.5.
Given the nature of how Pitt has won games recently, by the way, Pitt is winning games recently by playing defense, running the football, and not turning it over. I want to point that out.
I was waiting for that.
They've been doing it the past couple weeks. I got to give them credit for it. I'll give credit where it's due. But honestly, defense and running the football has to be Pitt's calling card the rest of the season, right? It has to be.
Yes.
It's the two things they do
ride
well.
Ride Izzy and let the defense get turnovers.
It's the two things they do well. They run the ball well behind that offensive line with Izzy Abanikanda, who, by the way, runs like a freaking deer. Like, watching him run is just, it's like something out of National Geographic, man. That stride is just gorgeous.
It is.
He's like an antelope, like on the savannah. Like, the way he just gallops is fantastic. And I'm not saying that to make fun of him. I'm saying that in complete awe because he's a great athlete. And that offensive line has found their niche. They found that solidarity, and they're opening holes for him. So do that. Play strong defense, which we know they're capable of. That defensive front is about as good as any in college, as college football, and they're playing like it.
And they finally got healthy.
They're playing like they're a shutdown unit. So that's what I expect to see happen. And honestly, it's Duke coming to town. If they can beat Syracuse by 10, they can beat Duke by 7.5. I'll take Pitt.
Me too. And for the same reasons you just gave. Plus, it's Duke. Duke's not a football school.
Yes, they're not a football school.
TCU at Baylor. TCU -2.5. I'll go first on this one. And I'm going to take TCU because we both have them in the playoff. Therefore, they have to win this game.
I'm going to take TCU too, but I think we talked about this last week. We're talking about the remaining games on the schedule.
Yeah.
They were on the road against Texas, on the road against Baylor, and at home against Iowa State. This is the one that scared me. Dave Aranda's a really good coach, especially on the defensive side. You can't tell me he won't have a defensive game plan to try to slow down Max Duggan in this offense. All the same, I will take TCU in a tight one. I'll take him covering the 2.5.
Me too. Illinois at Michigan. Michigan 17.5 point favorites.
Oh boy. I don't like giving Michigan that many points. And it's at the Big House, right?
Yes.
I don't like giving Michigan that many points. However.
And Ohio State's up next week.
Ohio State
might have their eyes on that game.
They
do have their eyes on that game.
Joel Klatt, I thought, laid this out really well on Colin Cowherd's show. He said Michigan has to figure out if they're capable of throwing the football. And they need to do it this week against Illinois. And it's a good test against an Illinois defense that likes to play man-to-man. Brett Bielema, coach in Illinois, a guy I used to cover in Fayetteville when he coached at Arkansas. But that defense likes to play man-to-man. It's going to be a good test for them to throw the football. They got to see if this quarterback is what they say he is. Because if not, it's going to be Corum and the other running back whose name I can't remember right now. But they're horses. We know that they can run on people because they've trampled people all year long. But Joel Klatt's point was they need to figure out if they can throw the ball or try to get to a rhythm of it. Because if they fall behind against Ohio State, they're not catching them.
It's a wrap.
If Ohio State gets in a shootout next week, it's over.
Yep.
But Michigan, I don't know if I trust 17.5 points. Especially against an Illinois defense that's actually pretty good against the pass. So Michigan's going to be forced to throw the football, and Illinois thinks going to be ready for it. I think Michigan wins by a couple scores, but Illinois covers the 17.5.
Okay.
Of course, I say that now, and they'll get smoked by 30, but
I'm going to take Michigan.
Wow. I can't say I blame you. On a normal day, I'd say Michigan. I just have this feeling Illinois' defense might at least be somewhat equal to the task. But then Michigan, and this is what they do, they will just wear you down. over three quarters, and that fourth one, they just run you over.
I just think that even though Joel Klatt says they need to learn how to throw the ball, they're not going to actually do it.
I
think they're just going to run Corum.
They may not be able to do it against that Illinois defense. Mm-hmm. I think that's the point.
Yep. Georgia at Kentucky. Georgia 22.5-point favorites. I am taking Georgia.
Kentucky has let me down too many times. Even being at home in Lexington.
It's Georgia.
We just talked about it. The tribal chief is going to be in your city, Lexington. Acknowledge them. Georgia covers the 22.5 because, God forbid, I bet against them right now.
Yep. Bedlam, OK State, Oklahoma. Oklahoma 7.5-point favorites. But Oklahoma State is the ranked team in this game.
Are they playing this in Norman or in Stillwater?
It's in Norman.
It's in Norman. Ooh, Oklahoma 7.5 in Norman. We've talked about how I don't trust Oklahoma State, right?
Correct. But we don't trust Oklahoma on the show either.
We don't trust Oklahoma either.
I think 7.5 is too many for Bedlam.
It feels like too many for Bedlam, and it feels like too many for this Oklahoma team.
Mm-hmm.
That lost to West Virginia in Morgantown, mind you. Granted, it was on the road, but still.
I think you ride Mike Gundy. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, we're riding a mullet. God help me. All right. I'm holding my nose, but picking Oklahoma State.
We're riding the mullet.
Jeez.
I'm a man. I'm 40. That's who we're riding right now.
Yeah, we're riding Gundy. My God.
Here's going to be a fun one. The over-under is 75.5. What game am I talking about?
You got to be talking about UCLA, USC.
You're darn right I am.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
USC -2.5 against UCLA. It's technically a road game, but it's not because the game's being played in the home field for both teams.
Right.
It's being played at the Rose Bowl. Who are you going with?
This is one of those games where you are reminded that Chip Kelly is the head coach at UCLA.
Okay.
They are going to run the football. And Charbonnet, that running back.
Yes.
Is really good. I didn't realize UCLA is the best team in the country at yards per carry. They're going to ride Zach Charbonnet.
And DTR.
And they're going to shred USC's defense. They're going to have to try to keep up with UCLA. Now, granted, the passing game will keep them in it, but if UCLA gets that running game going early, they're going to grind them down in the fourth quarter. Pun intended. I'm taking UCLA +2.5.
I've seen USC's defense all season long because they've been in a good number of my parlays that I've made and have stopped making because I keep losing. I'm taking UCLA as well. USC's defense is hot garbage. UCLA can run the football just like you talked about. I think they're going to win the game.
UCLA's offense, that run offense is going to go Fruit Ninja on USC's defense.
Fruit Ninja.
It's going to be straight up Fruit Ninja style. Carving them all day.
That's the first time I've heard of Fruit Ninja in a long time.
Fruit Ninja's a great game. It's a fun game to play at Dave & Buster's. You play the arcade version.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Finally, another Pac-12. Utah and Oregon.
Ooh.
The Ducks are -3. I'm taking the Utes.
You're taking Utah on the road in Eugene.
I don't trust Bo Nix no more.
Oh, you're off the Bo Nix train. If they were playing this game in Salt Lake, I'd say Utah and not look back.
Correct. But Oregon just lost at home to Washington.
They did. And
that's a rivalry game, though.
I also think that was Oregon's own fault.
Well, of course it was. They went for it at their own 35-yard line.
I don't see them making that many of the same mistakes twice. If they're playing this game in Salt Lake, I'm going to Utah, not blinking.
So you're taking Oregon.
I'm going to roll with Oregon on this one.
Wow.
They're better than they were last week.
He's going Oregon.
I'm going Oregon. Not because of Bo Nix, but because I think this team is better than they looked last week against Washington. I think they hurt themselves.
Okay. I mean, it's not a bad pick. I mean, it's the Pac-12. I mean, a lot of points scored.
Don't get me wrong.
It's going to come down to the final possession.
Don't get me wrong. Utah's a great pick because that quarterback is insane.
Yeah.
Like, Utah can really, really wear your defense out.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, it's a good team.
All right.
Shout out to Kyle Whittingham. Incredibly, incredibly underrated coach.
All right, let's fade that down. So, the folder that I had our NFL music bed in has been deleted.
Thanks, guys.
So we're going to go on the fly here. I'm just going to open up my NFL Films playlist, and we're just going to let it go.
All right. Here it is.
This is called Doing It on the Fly. Sponsored by Ethos Life.
Yeah, we got to find a sponsor for Hot Sheet.
All right.
I'll get on that one soon.
This game is already being played while we're recording this. I have not seen a score. I do not know what's going on in it. The Titans are at the Packers. Green Bay is -3. I don't know what the score is. I wrote this down already, so it's not cheating. And I took Tennessee because I don't trust Green Bay.
I'm going Green Bay because Tennessee is hurting. They got a lot of guys out on defense.
Okay.
A lot of guys. A couple starting offensive linemen, handful of guys on defense, but Dupree's not playing. Tennessee is hurting, and Green Bay is, they're really relying on running the football. They beat Dallas up in the run game last week. I was surprised with how much they ran the football, and Aaron Rodgers seemed willing to run the football. You could tell he really wanted to win that game against Dallas.
Of course. I mean, it was getting to the point where people were questioning if he should even be in the league anymore. I mean,
yeah,
he feels the pressure. The reason I picked the Titans is because the Packers run defense, or the Titans run defense, is really good.
Yeah.
And I don't think Aaron Jones is running all over them like he did last week.
On a normal week, if everybody's healthy, I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think the Titans have maybe too many injuries to overcome. Plus, they got to deal with their own offense with a couple offensive linemen hurt and see if they can actually move the ball. So yeah. I'll go Green Bay at home.
Okay.
Short week, home team, Thursday night game. Thursday night games usually favor the home team.
Should I look at what the score is, or should we leave?
No. Let's not mess it up. We don't want to be accused of shenanigans. We're not from the Qatar national soccer team.
We're not on shenanigans cam.
No, we're not on shenanigans cam. That's reserved
every Friday night, KDK TV.
only on nights when it's Royce Jones, Ray Petlin, and myself.
I live for shenanigans.
Ken Rice is above shenanigans. He is far too distinguished and illustrious to be involved in shenanigans. That is far beyond him.
We move on to Sunday.
Let's move on to Sunday.
Speaking of shenanigans, Eagles, who just came off a loss, are at Jeff Saturday's Colts. Indy +6.5 at home.
Philly. Philly's not the Raiders, for the record. I think Philly got their wake-up call. There's no such thing as a good loss, but I felt like losing to Washington was a necessary one. Just so Philly can get the whole okay playing to be undefeated thing. They can get that out of the way. They can flush it. They can cleanse the palate and get back to what they were doing.
Did you see what they did?
What do you mean?
They added.
Oh, yeah.
And Domacon sued their team.
They said, you know what? Let's fix this up and go get a freaking Mahler who probably should have won the Heisman the year he was just dominating at Nebraska.
And they also added Linval Joseph as well. So they get beat up by Taylor Heineke, and they go, that'll be enough of that.
Yep, let's fix this problem, and let's fix it straight away. It's a good move for Philly.
It is.
They don't have many weaknesses, but they're trying to sew them up. Good on them. And for that reason alone, I'll take them over the Colts. That and the fact that it's the Colts.
And it's only a 6.5-point spread.
Yeah,
that's only weird.
6.5. Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Weird. I'm taking the Eagles.
Agreed.
Rams at Saints. I'll go first. I'm taking the Rams. Stafford's going to play in this game more than likely. Cooper Kupp is out, but I don't trust the Saints.
High ankle sprain for Cooper Kupp. I'm curious to see what this Rams offense looks like without Cooper Kupp. What did you say the spread was?
It's the Saints -4.
Saints -4?
At home.
Wow.
Yep. If the Saints win, I think it'll be by 3, not 5.
I would agree. And I think this Rams defense could probably use a game against a guy like Andy Dalton. But can they stop Alvin Kamara is the question.
Right.
Can they stop them in that dome is the question.
I mean, if you have Aaron Donald, you would think he can stop Kamara.
I mean, they're going to have to rely on Van Jefferson, Ben Skoranek.
Higby.
Zach Higby.
Tyler Higby.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez, man. I get my Higbys confused. I'm going to New Orleans.
Oh, I thought you might.
I don't think you can keep Alvin Kamara down forever. I don't think that's possible.
I hope Olave has a good game, but I'm worried that Ramsey's going to lock him down.
That's fair, and the Rams have the defensive backs to do it.
Yeah. Bears at Falcons, Atlanta -3. You go first.
Man. Can I love, like, one thing about a team without being a fan of the team? Because I love what the Bears do running the football.
Can I just say one thing? I just got notified. Christian Watson touchdown. Fantasy points.
There you go. There you go. you go.
I picked him up this week for that reason
alone.
There
you go.
Let's go.
Nicely done, my friend.
Don't know the score, but touchdown.
Nicely done, my friend.
Okay, what you were saying again about the Bears and Falcons?
I love what they do with their run offense. Their run offense is fun, man. They just keep
Justin
running up yards.
Fields was being named the worst quarterback bust in NFL history a couple weeks ago, and he has taken this league and turned it upside down.
Yeah.
What he has been doing the last couple of weeks, now granted it was against the Lions and against the Dolphins, but still, he's absolutely killing it.
I agree.
With his arm and with his legs. And for that reason alone, I'm taking the Bears.
It's hard to figure out which team you're going to get from Atlanta when they play.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. And as far as teams having holes, it feels like Chicago is starting to fix theirs a lot faster than Atlanta's fixing theirs.
Right.
Plus, they're in a dome, which I think factors in. I'll go Bears, too.
Nice.
Which is surprising, but I'll take them.
I like it. This is a weird one. Commanders at Texans. It's Texans plus 3.5. The Commanders just beat the Eagles, and they're only a 3.5-point favorite in this one.
Well, the question is, can Taylor Heidke keep this going? Can Washington run the football? Their defense is starting to get healthy again. I kind of like Washington in this one. And honestly, I thought you saw the fight Washington has playing in that game against the Eagles. I think something that you and I did not take into account, Ron Rivera had just lost his mother. They came together and fought for that man. And I think they just showed him how much they really, really think about him.
Right.
I think they're going to keep that fight going. I don't know if it'll be a hangover from that game, but I think Washington rediscovered their fight. I'll go with the Commanders.
I like the Commanders. I'm going with them as well. The NFC East has been insane this year.
I heard a crazy stat that I had never heard before. The NFC East as a division has the best winning percentage of any division through 10 weeks ever in NFL history.
Ever.
Nuts. Crazy, right?
I'm trying to think, there were years where the AFC North had multiple 10-win teams when the Bengals, Steelers, and Ravens all were playing for 11 wins.
Right.
And they still don't top it?
Well, after 10 weeks.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
That's crazy.
Think about it, though. Going into this weekend, Philly 8-1, Giants 7-2, Dallas 6-3, Washington 5-5. The worst team in this division is 500.
500. And they just beat the Eagles.
And they just beat the top team in the division. That's insane.
The Commanders are actually kind of fun. I never thought I'd say that.
They are. They are kind of fun. And I was so glad that Taylor Heineke's getting shot.
Me too.
Because he makes them fun.
Carson Wentz is hot garbage. Don't let that guy play football anymore. This coming from a guy that rooted for the Colts last year.
Oh, there were people who wanted Carson Wentz to be a Steeler. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no.
There weren't many of them, but there were some out there lurking. That's all I'm going to say about that one.
The Jets are at the Patriots as we move on. New England minus 3. This one is tough.
This is tough.
Because I'm pretty sure, didn't the Jets beat the Patriots the first time? Let me look. Jets, Patriots. Okay, let me try that again.
No, they lost 22-17 at home.
Okay. But the Jets are coming off a bye week after just beating Buffalo.
That's a fair assessment.
The game is in New England.
But the Patriots are coming off a bye as well, and they're at home.
Yes. The game is in New England. The Patriots are minus 3. I think Belichick's defense will do enough to disrupt Zach Wilson. I'm going to take New England.
I'm going to trust Bill Belichick at home after a bye week more than I'm going to trust Robert Saleh on the road after a bye week. So for that alone, I'm taking New England.
Okay. Lions and Giants. Giants only a 3-point favorite at home. I'm going to take the Giants.
I'm surprised it's only 3 points. That Lions defense is a sieve.
So what are we missing here?
I don't know. I don't know. And I mean, is Saquon Barkley not playing or
something?
Oh, he's
playing.
That's just what I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, what's missing here?
Right.
I can't figure it out.
It's a low spread.
If Saquon Barkley is playing and Daniel Jones is playing, I'm going to go with the Giants by default.
Yep.
Because I don't see the Lions stopping them.
Maybe it's because the Lions came all the way back and beat Chicago last week that people think, hey, they have some fight in them.
The Lions have always had fight. I mean,
but they can't play defense.
We're talking about the fighting kneecap biters out of Detroit. Like
they have a good offense.
They've got a really good offense.
They can't play defense.
Points. They can score points and rack up yards. It's just they can't win shootouts.
Right.
And I don't think the Giants at home are going to give them that many opportunities to turn that game around.
I don't either.
3 points feels like really, really light.
Panthers at Ravens. Baltimore 12.5-point favorites. I'm going to take the Ravens. It's Baker Mayfield at quarterback.
Baker Mayfield's at quarterback. And, Greg?
Yeah?
The Ravens are doing that thing
that the Steelers should be doing.
That teams are doing to win games. They're running the football, playing defense, not turning it over. Yeah, I like the Ravens. And they're forcing turnovers, too. That defense is getting healthy. And they brought in Roquan Smith. And they're starting to figure out what to do with the run game. They're figuring out how to at least run the ball and creatively throw the football with Lamar Jackson and get him moving around. Baltimore's figuring it out. They've held a 10-point lead in every game this season. Even the games they've lost.
They blew it, yeah. But not many, yeah.
That's insane, though. That's crazy.
I picked up their defense this week strictly because they're playing the Panthers. I'm taking the Ravens.
It's a good move. I like Baltimore.
Browns and the Bills. The game is being played in Detroit. Originally, I had Browns +8.5 in a blizzard, but it's not going to be in a blizzard anymore. Josh Allen's going to be pissed after what happened last week. I'm taking Buffalo by a million.
I'm going to say this again. It's not the reason why I'm picking Buffalo. I'm going to say this again. God help the team that's on the other side when Buffalo discovers running the football. If last week wasn't a wake-up call for Buffalo to run the football and stop letting Josh Allen do everything by himself, I don't know what's going to convince them.
Right.
All the same, I'm still taking Buffalo on the neutral site in the dome.
Raiders and Broncos at 4:05. It's Denver -2.5.
can we just say this one at the same time?
Go ahead.
1, 2, 3.
Broncos.
I'm done. Done with the Raiders. They have cost me 2 parlays now, Greg. Remaining leg against the team that they should beat.
Yep.
And they lose. They had a double-digit lead against Arizona and lost.
Correct. Multiple times they took the lead against the Colts and gave it right back.
Just, I can't.
And you only needed 1 point.
I'm done. And you and I both love Devontae Adams. He's our favorite receiver in the league. But I'm done with the Raiders. Done.
I'll root for him for my team. I'll root for Josh Jacobs for my team. The rest of that team can lose.
You're absolutely right. I'll take it.
Cowboys-Vikings, game of the week, but we won't get to see it on television because the Steelers got flexed. This Fair one's enough. Weird. The Vikings are at home, but the Cowboys are the favorite. I'm taking the Vikings.
I'm taking the Vikings as a home underdog because it's just crazy not to. You saw what they did against Buffalo. They're not going to be afraid of... They're not going to be afraid of Dallas.
Can you believe how far we've come from the beginning of the year? I mean, I took the Vikings to win the division.
You did.
But you were like, I don't trust Kirk Cousins. And now we both trust Kirk Cousins and the Vikings.
Life is weird.
They're playing some really good football right now. They just beat Buffalo.
But honestly, though, let's take a moment. You called it. You had Minnesota winning the division.
I did not trust Green Bay without Devontae. As much crap as I'm getting from people that are saying, Aaron Rodgers won the MVP without Devontae. He won the Super Bowl without Devontae. Look at what's going on in Green Bay without Devontae.
But what did he do with Devontae? How many games did he win with Devontae?
Thank you.
The reason why they didn't win a Super Bowl or did anything with Devontae is because they didn't have a defense. It had nothing to do with Devontae.
Thank
you. In fact, they didn't have a freaking defense.
Thank you.
Hello?
Thank you.
I think people don't really look at what wins Super Bowls. Like, actually go look stuff up. Defense, then again, that's what I do.
Defense wins championships. Bengals at Steelers. Steelers +4.5 at home. I'm riding with the Steelers.
You know me. Mike Tomlin, a home underdog?
You're riding with it.
I'm best underdog coach in the league. I'm not backing off of that now. Especially against this team that they already should have bludgeoned in week 1 if the offense can move the ball from me to you. And now that they're actually starting to rediscover a run game, they may have Minkah Fitzpatrick back by some medical miracle after he had emergency appendectomy.
I mean, he's been practicing all week.
He's been practicing, and you're going to have Minkah and KZ and TJ Watt?
Jamar Chase against that offensive line?
No Jamar Chase against that offensive line that's porous and pretty much got Burrow killed the first time? Good luck. Of course I'm taking the Steelers.
We need a drop of Morgan Freeman.
We do need a Morgan Freeman drop. We really do. We totally do.
I'll work on that. Sunday Night Football, the game that flexed out the Steelers-Bengals.
And it should have.
Chiefs at Chargers.
How is this not the pick to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, it was an AFC North game with Steelers and Bengals.
This should have been the pick from the beginning.
It should have. The Chargers are +6.5. I'm pretty sure I overheard a stat that said that the Chiefs are 23-3 against the Chargers in the last 26 meetings.
My God.
I'm going to go ahead and ride with Kansas City.
Primetime game at Arrowhead?
No, it's in L.A.
Oh, it's in L.A.?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, you did say Chargers +6.5. I don't think it matters. They're playing in a dome, and Patrick Mahomes still walks the planet. I got KC.
Yeah.
They can sign and insert wide receiver here, and he'll still win.
No Juju and no Mecole Hardman, but they still have Tony, and they still have that guy named Travis Kelce. I think they'll be okay.
They'll be fine. They'll be absolutely fine. They still got Mahomes.
Finally, Monday Night Football being played in New Mexico, 49ers and Cardinals. The 49ers are -8. Undetermined if Kyler Murray's playing in this game.
That's probably why they're -8.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if Kyler Murray was playing, it'd be, what, like -6 maybe?
Probably.
I don't think it would really change that much. I mean, you're talking about the other side of a touchdown or less than a touchdown.
What worries me, though, is how bad the 49ers looked against the Chargers secondary. Like, they should have been lighting them up.
Yeah, they should have really tore that team apart.
And they didn't.
I was really surprised by that.
I kind of think the Cardinals might cover 8. I think the 49ers are going to win, but the fact that the game's in Mexico and, you know, neutral site and all that, I think 8 points might be a lot.
I don't think you're wrong.
But if it's Colt McCoy, I think we'll be okay with the 49ers.
I'm going to go 49ers simply because I don't know. Even if Kyler Murray plays, I don't know if Arizona's defense can go stop for stop with San Francisco's defense. Because San Francisco has just about everything on defense.
Yeah.
They got a lot of athletes, including, by the way, number 57, Jerry Greenlaw. Woo pig. But no, seriously, I like San Francisco -8.
Okay. I'm going to go with them as well.
You're backing up the Cardinals.
Yeah, because I thought about it, and Colt McCoy, nah, no thanks.
He's no Blaine Gabbert.
The bed's about to end. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you next week.